This audio recording is copyrighted 2011 by AboutFacts.net and its licensors. All rights are reserved.
Well, the book Dark Mission, I don't know if you're familiar with it, with Hoagland and Barra.
Right. I haven't read it, but I'm familiar with it.
Well, when I spoke to Mike Barra, he indicated that there was plenty of buildings on the moon. And I read the book also, and it seems to indicate that most of these are just ruins, and they look to be millions of years old, and it looks like they were attacked. And that's why I asked you that question before. Do you think that maybe we were much more advanced at one time, you know, and had bases in different places?
Yeah, I wonder. You know, I interviewed a guy who claims to have been a photographer on the ship which picked up the astronauts for a period of years during the moon missions.
Uh-huh.
And he was just, you know, a petty class photographer who had his security bumped up real suddenly. And it's his job to photograph the astronauts as they came down out of their capsule and were in isolation. And he was right there next to them. He said he was one of the first people to talk to them after they came down. And they told him, one and all of them, said that they were shocked at what they found up there on the moon, that there absolutely were bases, and he said that they were just flipping out because the military had not prepared them for what they were going to find.
Right, and there's a recording to this effect that an amateur recorded from a transmission from Apollo 11. I guess you know that.
Right. The Evans, God, that's another story that we have not heard the whole thing yet. And this photographer, this guy, it was his job to develop a lot of the films that these people took. He said there was rooms and rooms and rooms. It would have taken him 30, 40 years to get it all done. So he only developed a very, very small portion of the photographs that the astronauts took. And that these photographs clearly showed bases, some of which were operational, some of which had been destroyed. But he said that there was all kinds of structures, domes, there was crashed UFOs lying there on the surface.
Yeah, I've seen some of the photos, you know.
Yeah, if you pump up, you know, on YouTube or, you know, on the Internet, there's some extraordinary photos out there that you have to wonder if you know, these are actual valid leaks.
Well, there was something wrong with the Apollo 11 mission, and I'll tell you why I say that. The contamination, the anti-contamination treatments that the astronauts were given when it landed were all a fraud. You know that, right?
I have heard this, right.
The reason I say that is once there was so much moon dust in the capsule on the way back from their clothes and everything, and then they climbed out of the same capsule, were put in a boat to go to the aircraft carrier. But then everything was contaminated if there would have been anything wrong. And then they were put into isolation. It makes no sense at all.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It appears that it might have been largely a publicity stunt. I think we did go to the moon, but I don't think we were seeing what happened there, and I think probably some of the footage we've seen has been faked, you know, in a studio. And
I have on my website the photos from the preparation to go to the moon, where they built a set and everything. I guess you've seen these. And they look exactly like being on the moon, you know?
Right.
And this is how they used to practice for the moon landing. Now, I think we went to the moon the first time, but I think that a lot of the pictures that came out from some of the other missions were either altered or we didn't go. And the reason I say this is the backgrounds are the same, even though the astronauts are in different places.
Right. Yeah, I've been trying to figure out what exactly happened, because I do think that we went to the moon. There was just so many people involved, and we actually were able to track the capsule. And what's interesting is there's multiple reports that the capsule was followed by UFOs to and from the moon.
Oh, absolutely.
Each time we went,
yeah.
Right? So, mm-hmm. And some of the, I mean, we do have close-up photographs of the moon and men walking on it. It looks real to me, but like you say, I think some of it's been faked because they were put in a situation where they could not release this footage without admitting to what's really going on.
Yeah, and there's more to it than that even, because as time went by, NASA began to realize that some of this footage with the new techniques that we were gaining, could be examined then, and we could bring out things in the background and other things. And all of a sudden, they said they lost 80 boxes of film.
I could not believe when I heard that. Are they kidding us? I mean, how stupid do they think we are? Lost it?
So, you know, all this ties in some way, you know?
yeah, it absolutely does. And, you know, as far as the stuff we brought back from the moon, you know, moon rocks is supposedly all we brought back. Well, they haven't even released half of the weight that's been brought back. I mean, we know how much was brought back weight-wise, and people haven't seen it. So where is it? I want to know. It's not just rocks.
Well, there's more to that story, too. Some of the material that supposedly we brought back from the moon turned out to be material that was manufactured on Earth that they used to practice the moon landings and things. It was false moon material.
So,
you've heard that, right?
No, not exactly. No.
They manufacture moon dust on the Earth.
Right. I know that.
And some of the stuff was the stuff we had manufactured. They were claiming it was from the moon.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see what you're
saying. We gave some of it to some other countries, you know.
It's just awful. and there's accounts of people who actually work at NASA and whose job it was to airbrush photos.
Oh, yeah, I know that, yeah.
And, take out all the UFOs, take out all the structures, things like this, and then they released the photos to the public. So half of the photos we're seeing from NASA have already been altered. I mean, this is something that's, not only... It's coming from multiple sources, I guess is what I'm saying, not just Gary McKinnon and
We have proof. We have absolute proof of it. One of the things that we can prove that was altered was the shot of the face on Mars. Because what happened was the camera that they used was a high-resolution camera, but the picture, instead of having 256 shades of gray, came out with only 16. We lost 84% of the data in the picture. And this is the picture they showed everybody, where the face just looks like a mound of dirt almost.
Right. I think we're in a position where we have to start taking some really strong action if we want to end this kind of behavior within our own government. And, that's what's motivating me to write all these books and just get the word out as best as I can. But I just wonder how many people are sitting on this kind of information, have been threatened into silence. And I think as the next generation comes and the old generation dies, we're going to see many more people coming out on their deathbed to reveal that they were party to all of this.
Well, one of the problems is that there are people out there that they're only there for one purpose, disinformation. And I'm not going to mention any names, but there's one very famous person that I am sure he's only there for disinformation. He's got an opinion on everything. He says he knows about this or that. There's nothing you can ask him that apparently he doesn't know about, and he gives you the reasons. And it just, to me, it's just, there's something wrong, you know?
Yeah, I've got a list of, prominent researchers who I'm like, I have to question because they flip-flop, and then, I'm just not happy with them, the way they will support UFO research and then turn around and say, no, I'm sorry, I was wrong, this is not how it is, and, I've been threatened a couple of times. Once I was called up by some colonel guy who was telling me, I've got this high security clearance and I know all about the UFO.
Oh, do you know his name?
No, it was years ago.
There's a colonel that I sort of like, I tried to trace him because he kept turning up everywhere. Anything that had to do with weapons or space or inventions, this colonel kept cropping up. And that's why I can't remember the guy's name. But when you said colonel, it just triggered that in my mind, you know?
Yeah. There's
he was behind John Hutchinson's research.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, at some point, can you imagine someone, it's their job to ridicule researchers and to debunk various cases?
Oh, absolutely. You probably got too close on something and got them a little worried.
It's bizarre, yeah. Probably my biggest case was this whole Topanga Canyon UFO wave. And that did cause quite a bit of attention. I had lots of phone problems during that time, mail problems. I had someone run up and take my picture while I was driving. It was just bizarre. Weird things. And when I would lecture, there would be, you know, you can always kind of tell the government people because they're wearing suits and, they give themselves away when they start to debunk you and attack you.
Right.
And so I did run across that a little bit during the whole Topanga Canyon UFO wave. But for the most part, I have not had any interference. And my research is wide open to anyone who wants to, you know, I'm willing to tell exactly what I found out. Excuse me.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you never know who's reading anything that you write. For example, Dr. Lear, I think he had operated on something like 12 people to pull out probes out of them. And I did a story on him. I did an interview with him. I put it up on my website. And sure enough, I get this phone call from this woman who said she was one of the 12. Or email, rather, that she was one of the 12 that had a probe taken out of her, and I did a story on her. Now, what were the odds of that, you know? I checked back with Dr. Lear to make sure that she was really one of his patients, and she was.
Yeah, I am actually pretty familiar with Dr. Lear. I've spoken with him many times.
I have too, yeah.
And worked with some of his patients in that. His research is the smoking gun.
Absolutely. The amazing part of it is that there is no rejection in the human body of these implants.
Right. No foreign body rejection. How can you explain that? And honestly, there's so many other weird things about that whole avenue of research. A lot of these things he's taking out of people's bodies. And of course, it's not just him doing it now. There's a number of other people. But they all look identical, like cantaloupe seeds, or most of them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them. And there's a few that have actually been measured emitting electromagnetic radiation. How do you explain that?
They plug into the human body and use the electrical force of the human body to power them. And they're putting out a signal. Now, what kind of signal? We're not advanced enough to know what kind of signal it is. And that's the problem. We don't know whether it's just a tracking signal or it's more than that. Maybe it has in the signal, maybe they can tell different functions of the human body, you know?
Well, you know, absolutely. I think you're right. In fact, you know, there's a lot of speculation about implants and the purpose of them. And I think it's generally believed that they're used for tracking people or even mind control and that kind of thing. But I've been told by four separate abductees now. I'll call them abductees, contactees. For the purpose of these implants, which was not just for tracking, they were told by the ETs that the purpose was actually to measure the level of pollution within our bodies.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant. Yeah, they could measure different...
And also to boost the immune system. So there's really positive reasons for these implants as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is important to remain aware of, because there's a lot of fear-based thinking, and certainly within the media, particularly, fear dominates the whole UFO subject.
Well, when we talk about abductees and that they're peacefully aliens and they're just examining us and such, there is a whole school of thought that is just the opposite, you know? There's this school of thought that says that all of these people that disappear on the earth every year, and it's millions, are disappearing because of the aliens. They're killing them.
Right. I don't know that there's a whole lot of evidence to support that. There's certainly a few scattered cases. I looked into it, you know, and I just wrote this book, UFOs Over New Mexico, and I was shocked to find five separate cases where people disappeared as a result, apparently, of a UFO encounter. There's one farmer who was abducted in full view of his family.
Yes, I know the story.
Mm-hmm. And lifted right up into a saucer and never seen from again. And this is a case that comes from Leonard Stringfield, you know, a respected researcher.
Mm-hmm.
And he outlined another case of an entire family, which you know, a lady, her husband, and their child, who called up their relatives and said, "We just had a UFO encounter, and we're never going to see you again." And they disappeared. I've got a case here in California where a guy was contacted by ETs, and they told him that they would take him along with them if he wanted. And he told his family what happened, and he disappeared. They found his car with the car keys in it and never saw him again. So, yes, there are cases like that. But as far as, you know, the millions of people disappearing, a lot of these people who are disappearing don't have any prior UFO connection that we know of. And you'd think that we'd run into that a little bit more often, because it does seem to be, you know, when someone has UFO encounters, it seems to stretch back into their childhood in a lot of cases.
Oh, a lot of cases, yes.
But, I don't know. It really does make you wonder, where are all these people?
Well, I've looked into that a little bit, and I've found that a lot of people, younger people anyway, that have disappeared, when they come back, they don't change the records, you know? So you'll see somebody, well, say John Smith disappeared in November last year, but he's back, you know? But we don't know that. We just see that he disappeared. So a lot of that goes on, too. And also in the third world countries, there's a lot of problems with these disappearances because, you know, there's a lot of murders and things. And
exactly.
So who knows what's really going on?
I mean, ETs, are they hostile? Certainly, there's that potential. I think that there's a bell curve of behavior on the ETs, just like there is with humanity. We've got some that are truly benevolent and some that are absolutely not nice at all.
Well, did you hear this story about supposedly there's an underground base where an ET, a gray, was lecturing a room full of scientists? Did you ever hear this story? And
no.
The grays would not allow anybody to come into the room that had weapons. And one of the security guards came into the room with a weapon, and the gray killed everybody in the room within about half a minute.
I had not heard this at all.
Yeah, it might be something you want to look into.
I'll have to check that out. But yeah, well, certainly they seem to be, you know, the grays superior to us technologically and with mental powers. I'm not sure if they're necessarily more intelligent than our race, but hypnotists.
Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of intelligence. I think it's a matter of having access to more data than us.
Right. Absolutely. Their technology is by absolutely superior to ours, I think. But I'm not sure that they understand us that well. I think they're very, very interested in our emotions. That comes across over and over again, the grays in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they're very intrigued by us. And so there must be something about us that attracts them.
There are three ancient towns in the Indus Valley, and they're covered with radioactive dust. One is Harappa, another is Mohenjo-Daro, and there's a city in India named Rajasthan, and that's also been found to be under radioactive ash. Do you think there was an ancient nuclear attack on these cities, as some suggest? And if not, where do you think all this radioactive ash came from?
I think it was an ancient radioactive attack. And there's other evidence of that. I mean, there's places out in, where was it? The deserts was it India or Mongolia or somewhere around there? I forget exactly where it was, but it's completely glassified, you know, fused and melted by very, very, very high temperatures. So I think that's exactly what we're seeing is evidence of ancient nuclear blasts. And how else can you explain this? I mean,
well, some of the evidence even shows that people were walking in the streets and they were just struck down without warning, and their skeletons are just laying in the street.
Is that right?
See, yeah.
It's extraordinary. There's evidence is all there if you're willing to look at it. Like I said, there's enough evidence within the public arena to prove to anyone that UFOs are real, and all we have to do is look at it.
Michael Cremo believes that the man is millions of years old and that ancient skeletons of modern man have been found and hidden or ignored. What is your opinion on where human life came from on Earth? Do you think that we owe it to evolution or that we came from some other place and settled here?
From some other place and settled here, because I just cannot reconcile the fact that there are human-looking aliens that look just like us. I think it raises very, very serious questions about human origins. And as far as anthropology and the theory that modern humans are 40,000 or so years old, well, I took a bunch of anthropology courses in college, and I was shocked when I finally got a hold of, you know, the book Forbidden Archaeology.
Right, I have that book.
which I'm like, okay, a lot of what I was taught was not even true, and a lot of these really important discoveries are being covered up, and it's a very, very political field, and for that matter, they keep backdating the data of modern humans from, you know, 20,000, no, now it's 30,000, no, now it's 40,000, no, well, now we think it's 100,000.
That's right.
So it all depends on who you even talk to these days on human origins. So the evidence, to me, is showing that we did not evolve here and that we are aliens ourselves.
Well, what I found fascinating was the fact that a transistor was found inside of a rock that was millions of years old. Did you ever hear about that?
Yes, and it's amazing when you hear stuff like this. Like, well, what do you make of it? I mean, how... What the only explanation is that, you know, there was technology here at that time, and where did it come from? Is it ours? That's where we run into, you know, really obstacles in our thinking, and because it just flies against all of what's accepted in history.
Well, there's all of these records that show that so many different things have been found inside of lumps of coal that were hundreds of thousands of years old. And apparently a lot of pressure was put on some of the scientists about this. And I remember one scientist came out and said that, well, we were wrong when we said that coal took that long to form. He could prove that it could form in 20 years, you know? I said, oh, no. You know? You might be able to put, with a machine, you might be able to put enough pressure on something to make coal that way, but that's not how it was formed in a mine.
I think people are put in a situation where their entire worldview is threatened.
That's right.
It's what keeps a lot of people out of UFO research. I remember it's what kept me out, because you're kind of confronted with reports of not only UFOs, but telepathy and levitation, and it goes on from there. So it's just a bitter, tough pill to swallow all at once. And
well, it is, because there's a lot of people that are put out there to make it look foolish. And here's somebody trying to be serious and do serious research, and you got somebody that's acting like a complete nut out there, and he pulls down your credibility, you know?
Exactly. I just can't imagine that we're throwing money towards to end research, to, you know, make it look bad, to put things backward. It's just such the wrong thing to do.
Well, I noticed that... you may not agree with me on this, but I noticed that a lot of UFO symposiums are now combining with paranormal symposiums, and they're calling them UFO and paranormal. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. In fact, I just recently spoke at a convention which was half New Age crystal psychic and half UFO.
Well, I think that's the wrong way to go, personally.
I'm not entirely pleased about it. I see what you're saying. It kind of brings down the credibility of research. But on the other hand, there is a psychic aspect to a lot of this stuff. And I think that, you know, ghosts are real. I think that there's evidence of a lot of paranormal stuff being completely valid. But that's not what UFO research is about. It's much, I think, the avenue to take it to really convince the mainstream public would be to go the hardware route. And, you know, the landings, the landing trace cases, the implant removal cases, the medical evidence is extraordinary, the radar visual cases. This is all stuff that we really need to get the information out there on a much wider scale. And swinging it around with crystals and pendulums and palm readers is a mistake. I agree.
Well, I know that Dennis Balthasar is very mad over that fact that all these things are being combined now.
Yeah, you know,
he's a contributor to my website, you know, and he puts up an article every 2 months. And the last article, boy, he was really mad about that.
I have mixed feelings about it, you know, because I think to solve any mysteries, we can't throw away any evidence. You know, we do have to pay attention to everything that's going on. And a lot of the people who are having really extensive contact are also reporting, you know, a wide variety of paranormal activity. So it could be related in some ways. I remember early in my research, I heard about a case. I was interviewing these people, and they were describing a UFO that went over their house. And one of them said, you know, as it went away, it didn't go away. It turned invisible. It kind of faded away and just disappeared. And I hadn't heard that before. I thought, well, that's odd, you know. And
really?
But I didn't remove it. You know, I recorded it exactly like you said. And now I've run across that same description many times.
Well, I can tell you about a sighting I had, if you're interested.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I was in my backyard, and I heard a helicopter. And I had out binoculars because I was watching. I'm under a plane route, and I was just watching the planes, you know, taking it easy. And I look up, and I can't see anything. But yet I can hear this helicopter. So I take my binoculars, which have a red coating on the lenses, and I look up, and there's this helicopter right over my head with a platform under it. Now, I take the binoculars, I put them down, I look up. I cannot see this thing without the binoculars. And then finally, it flew off. And that was the sighting. It wasn't a UFO. It was obviously some kind of experiment.
Well, you know, UFOs can mimic themselves as helicopters as well.
No, but this was different. This had a platform hanging down by chains underneath it.
Bizarre.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have invisibility for some of our craft now. You know that.
And
I can tell you. Oh, you don't know this? Oh, well, let me explain it to you. There's two types. One is the primitive type, I call it. What they did was they mounted cameras on the top of the plane and screens on the bottom. And what happens is all you see is what is above the plane on the screen. You don't see the plane anymore.
Good Lord. I saw this with soldiers. I've seen the technology where they...
They've hidden tanks that way, right on the battlefield now. They put cameras behind the tank and screens in front of it, and the tank becomes invisible because all you see is the imagery of what's behind the tank.
Isn't that amazing? It's very simple.
It's so simple it isn't funny. But now there is a second type that they're working on. They haven't perfected it entirely. And that is a material that bends light waves.
Which is totally doable and doesn't violate the laws of physics at all.
Right.
Wow.
But so far they've only been able to get it to work, as far as I know, on the wavelengths that would be used to hide it from radar.
Well, these UFOs absolutely have this technology. We know that. And they can hide themselves not only visibly, but from radar as well. And what I find extraordinary, you know, this is something that I haven't run across a whole lot, but it's kind of changed the way I look at UFOs, is how big are they? How big is a UFO, right? Because people say, oh, it was 20 feet wide, it was 100 feet across, and then there's people who are taken inside them. And I ask them the same question, and they're like, well, you know, the rooms would seem to change size.
Yeah, Doctor Who, I call that.
And another guy, he was talking to the ETs, and he noticed that it was much larger inside than it was on the outside. He says, well, how big is this? And they kind of laughed and said, we make it as big as we want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's all hundreds and hundreds of accounts where people are looking at a UFO, very large, football field size, very commonly used term, and it shrinks down to a golf ball and disappears.
Right.
So these things can travel interdimensionally. They're not flying. They're not aerodynamic, as we would think of it. They're interdimensional craft, and they can change size. And there's multiple cases where people have seen a UFO or been able to go inside, and it's much larger on the inside. And there's one case which always comes to my mind when I think of that particular phenomena, where a gentleman who...
Excuse me, I thought you were going to say it was going to be one over with, what's the name of it? You know, the Air Force Base in England where the small UFO came down. Renfrewshire, was it?
Oh, Rendlesham?
Rendlesham, yeah. That's what I thought you were going to mention, because that UFO was very small.
Yeah, it was, but as far as I know, we weren't able to get inside that particular one.
No.
But if there's one case that comes to mind, which was investigated by Leonard Stringfield, who was the first guy to really look into crash retrievals. And there was this UFO that we had captured, and when a soldier was sent inside to, you know, take photographs and stuff of it, it was much, much larger on the inside than it was on the outside. So they have this technology that can expand space, essentially, I guess, is what we would be one explanation, at least.
Well, I find a couple of things very strange, and one of them is that a lot of these TV shows, these old ones even, they had things like this on the shows. For example, when you said that about the size, well, everybody knows that the Doctor Who fantasy show, I don't know if you've ever seen it, from England.
Sure.
Well, you know, he flew around in basically a little box, a telephone box, that was huge on the inside.
Yeah, well, it makes you wonder where some of these ideas are coming from.
That's what I'm saying, you know. Who knows? Maybe there was captured UFOs before that, and somehow something leaked out, you know?
Well, I know that the James Bond novels written by Ian Fleming?
Yeah.
A lot of them contain information that made our government, you know, pretty nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And because some of the stuff he's describing is actually real. And like the fake moon missions, I believe that comes up in one of the James Bond novels, so...
Yeah.
There's definitely true information being leaked out within the literature, and it's not the opposite way, which some skeptics say, that, oh, you know, grays are just a product of science fiction. No, I think science fiction is a product of, you know, UFOs.
It could be. It could be. There's been a lot of talk of flying humans sighted in Mexico.
Right.
What's your thoughts on that?
Interesting, and there's a few cases like this historically. The Spring-Heeled Jack in England, and there's, you know, the Mothman in Virginia,
right.
And there was one case in New Mexico that I wrote about, which was very similar, and was dealing with not a human being. Apparently it was an ET. In each of these cases, it's not your typical human, but it, of course, there is also a very, very long tradition of human levitation, and I wrote a book about that, human levitation, and that appears in every single culture and stretches back thousands of years, literally. So, but this is, you know, I really don't know what to make of it. I don't see, it's one of those unusual things that you run across that it's just pretty rare, and I haven't ever investigated a first-hand case of it.
Mm.
But, I think I did. There were some photographs out there of that, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there is. There's, matter of fact, there's even a film or two, I think, on YouTube.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, because I saw that. I'm like, wow, well, you look at that. I can only go, I don't even know what to think of that. Ken, honestly, I don't even know what to think of it.
Well, you know what I find unusual? Supposedly, we're talking about a culture that I guess would have to be at least 10,000 years in advance of ours. Do we agree on that, or?
The ETs, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I would say.
Well, how come?
Most of them, at least that.
Yeah, how come if they're so advanced, they crash so much?
Well, I think that's easily answerable. Accidents happen. And I think also we've gotten a hold of technology and, like, particle beam weapons, and we can shoot them down. And I think that's exactly what's happening. I talked to a lady who worked at China Flats. What's it called? It's a military base up here in California. And she said she worked with a bunch of soldiers who, in fact, had this gun that they had acquired from a crashed UFO. And they would go out there in the desert and practice with it, shooting at, you know, the wild burrows out there and levitating old junk and just using it for different purposes, because it had different abilities. It could levitate objects. It could incinerate things. It could do a bunch of different things.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because when the UFO supposedly crashed at Roswell, they had been experimenting with a new type of radar. And this radar they found could actually bring down, interfere with, let's put it, with the propulsion system, the anti-gravity propulsion system of a UFO.
Right.
And the Russians actually built a radar station that used a super high-powered version of this, and they were going to use it to bring down UFOs. And there's a story that a UFO came down, shot a beam. This beam went through a Russian soldier without harming him and hit the radar station and blew it to pieces. Matter of fact, you'll find that story in one of Timothy Good's novels.
Right. So, yeah, they definitely have the ability to do this stuff, and we have the ability to bring them down as well. And as far as the Roswell and radar, I think that's pretty well accepted among the Roswell researchers, that's exactly what happened, and that's why we see a lot of UFOs darting around now in that peculiar pattern of right angles, is to avoid getting that radar lock on that interferes apparently with their navigation system. And this has been told, you know, Bill Herman, he's a contactee in South Carolina, I believe, and he was told this exactly by the ETs, that it was the radar that brought their craft down in Roswell, and then that's why they move in these peculiar patterns.
Hmm. Now, there seems to be a lot of USO reports coming out of Puerto Rico. Have you noticed this, and do you think that there is some sort of underground water connection to some of the bodies of water on the island and to bases under the ocean?
Yes. I think that as far as USO activity, that's one of the major hot spots, probably because there's an underwater base there, and Southern California is another one. There's a couple of, I believe there's been a couple of really significant waves near Iceland in that area, which makes sense because there's a, you know, I believe that the ETs are using our oceans and probably in large numbers, and it's really hard to get a handle of exactly what's going on, but I know it's not only in our oceans, it's in lakes and rivers. I'm getting a lot of input about that. There's one guy who contacted me in Texas, and there's this little lake where he lives, and he told me this extraordinary story where he went out as a kid with three other people, two girls and two boys, and they were kind of going out there to make out on the lake, and they had just got out there on their 25-foot speedboat and were kind of in the harbor there when this object rose up from beneath them and struck their boat. And they tried to get away and could not get away. They were terrified at this point because the boat was not moving, even though they had the throttle at full blast. And they all blacked out. Next thing they know, it's a couple of hours later, and they're in a different portion of the lake.
Hmm.
And so they were apparently, you know, had missing time.
Right.
And this,
right.
It's one of the few USO abduction cases that I've run across. But I've run across, you know, a couple of others. And that's almost unheard of. In the literature, at least, UFO literature, is people being abducted by a USO. But that's one of the cases I've run across, and I've run across quite a few others now. So it's very interesting what's going on. Little bodies of water up in upstate New York, these objects are flying out of little tiny reservoirs.
Mm.
So they're hiding all over the place.
Do you think the fact that the United States military has the most tunneling machines, you know, boring machines,
right,
and that it's been rumored that they even have nuclear-powered ones, has anything to do with the fact that there might be alien underground bases?
Yeah, I think if you look into this, you'll be shocked. I was really shocked because I hadn't really researched underground bases and things like that until, you know, I started hearing about this possible undersea bases. And then, now, there's been a lot of research, not as much as there should be, but Richard Sauder, he wrote a book about underground bases across the United States, and it turns out there's a large number. This whole United States has been hollowed out, honest to God. It's not just Cheyenne Mountain Complex and the few others that are, you know, well publicized. There are numerous official military underground bases.
Mm-hmm.
And over again in the UFO literature, you'll hear cases of aliens being down there working with humans. It happened in the Rendlesham Forest. It's happened at Edwards Air Force Base, Area 51. And there's other cases as well. So I think that there is evidence that the aliens are living underground. And what's interesting is Area 51, speaking of that in particular, I've heard from 3 or 4 different sources that the bottom levels are pretty much run by the ETs. So I don't know. It's second-hand, third-hand at this point. But
do you think there's any truth to the rumor that we have managed somehow to connect all our bases, even though they may be on other continents, by building huge tunnels under the ocean?
Boy, these are really good questions.
Because, thank you.
I've been contacted by a couple of people who, you know, saw me doing research in the Santa Catalina Channel on TV, and they thought it was important I should know this, that there's a tunnel leading from Edwards Air Force Base to, I believe it was San Clemente Island,
mm-hmm.
which is just beyond Catalina, is military-owned, going all the way back to Area 51. And that's a really long distance for an underground tunnel. And apparently these tunnels are extremely large enough to put very large craft through.
Well, I'll take that a step further. Did you know that there are secret submarine bases off the coast of Florida and that there were water-filled tunnels that connect these bases to the middle of the desert in Arizona and other places?
No, I had not heard that, and I'm like trying to come to grips with these kind of accounts because, like I said, I know that there's a complete underground secret government going on and that there's a lot of people who are privy to all this amazing stuff because, we have to kind of integrate our society, which has become schizophrenic. There's this portion which is very wealthy, another portion which has access to all this information. And then there's the large, you know, mainstream public, which knows nothing about what's going on.
That's true. There are so many sightings that we in the U.S. hear almost nothing about. One of these cases occurred in Puerto Rico in 1977, when over 2,000 people saw two UFOs dive into the Atlantic after flying over Marrakech. Do you think that sightings like this are not reported for a reason?
There is definitely a suppression of UFO information in the media. That's been proven by that author, I forget his last name, Hansen. He wrote a book called The Missing Times.
Mm-hmm.
There is definitely, you know, cover-up of UFO information. And nevertheless, every year, at least 1, 2, or 3 UFO stories just cannot be ignored. Too many people witness it, and it reaches up through all the hoops that it has to get through to get into the news as a mainstream news story. And like the O'Hara Airport sighting, like Stevensville, Texas, like that thing in Mexico City, every year, whatever case it is, in Belgium, there was that wave of sightings. So I think it's kind of a reluctant on the media's part, but they have to cover it because there's just such a demand for information. But like what happened with the Phoenix Lights and that whole media circus is just really typical and problematic of what the situation. The governor of Arizona himself saw the UFO, Fife Symington.
That's right.
And he didn't report it. He didn't report it for 2 years at least. So what kind of situation are we dealing with here where the governor of a state can see a UFO along with thousands of other people and feels afraid to admit the truth?
Yeah, well, that's the problem with our society right now. We've been taught to think that anybody that has anything to do with UFOs is a crackpot. Please describe what happened in Shag Harbor, Canada on October 67, and tell us how you would rate this event on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being a UFO or USO sighting that is undeniably extraterrestrial.
I'll give it a 9, definitely. It's right up there with Roswell. I think it's one of the best UFO crash cases we have. There's, I'm going to say, 5 or 10 really good UFO crash cases, Roswell being the best one. Kecksburg, Pennsylvania is another really credible one. And certainly there's hundreds, and I believe probably the majority of them are real. But Shag Harbor, boy, that's a case where there was just so many witnesses who saw this from different places. Watched the Navy go out there searching for this thing, and reports of people who are actually, you know, divers, the divers who worked on this. The research on this case is extraordinary, and I think it's and we not only do we have interviews with the witnesses of who watched this thing come down out of the sky, watched it sink beneath the waves, went down there and looked after it, and recovered this thing, or actually I believe it flew away in the end. But we have documents which prove that the government was there and doing all these investigations. So it's a case that should have received a lot more publicity and hasn't for whatever reason.
Do you think it's a little strange that here was Canada with a USO event, and all of a sudden the United States Navy sails right up into the Canadian waters and sends down people and does different things? Would that indicate to you that the United States is really in charge of all of these UFO investigations, more or less?
Yeah, more or less, I believe that's exactly the case. We seem to have some sort of a surveillance system set up where we can be anywhere.
Yeah, because I've heard stories where we have actually gone into South American countries and grabbed UFOs and left, you know?
Right. Wasn't that what happened with the Virginia case? And I believe that's true in other cases as well, in Mexico.
Not in all cases. That's the case where the Mexican army guys died, right? That were going out to the UFO?
I think so, if we're thinking about the same case.
Yeah.
But, there's so many. But, yeah, I do believe it's us who are really who have taken a hold of this thing by the horns and are really actively covering it up and really actively controlling the whole situation, which is not really controllable anymore. And look at all the video that's coming out. Look at all the... We're right at the point. We're right at that 100th monkey where everything's just going to turn around and this stuff is going to be treated a lot more seriously.
Well, what kind of technology do you think allows a USO to dive to the bottom of the ocean without being crushed?
A force field. I think they have clearly some sort of a force field which can push water molecules, and for that matter, not only water molecules, any molecules, because there are accounts of these UFOs diving into land. I talked to a guy who was driving through Fresno along the freeway with his friends, and they saw what they thought was a jet about to crash. It was just actually two bright lights, and as they got right close to them, it turned and went into the ground, and they said it was as if the ground opened up and swallowed these things.
Wow, I never heard that one before.
So. And I've heard that in a couple of other cases. It's
well, you think that could be an entrance rather than the UFO going into the ground?
I think that there's probably some sort of underground base in these areas. But I think is that they have the ability to travel through the Earth in some cases, the really advanced ones. Because that's what they're doing with the water, and certainly we have nothing that can impact the water at 300, 400 miles per hour, which is, some of these things are moving faster than that, apparently, and hit the water and remain intact.
Right.
So they're not even hitting the water.
Well,
as we would think of it, they're pushing it aside somehow.
A big deal was made about the speed of USOs and how impossible it was for anything to travel at 300 mile an hour speeds underwater, like a USO. And yet it's come to light that there are torpedoes that can go that fast and much faster, and that this technology may be adoptable or has been adopted to submarines. Do you think that some of these speeding underwater objects could be ours?
You can't discount that possibility, and the only reason I would discount it presently is because when one of these things shows up, the military is scrambling all over the place. If it's one of ours, that's not the way they would react.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever we're caught chasing one of these things, well, you know, if we were escorting it, that would be a different scenario.
Can I add a little something to that?
Sure.
The Russians were the ones that developed this super-fast torpedo. And the way it works is that it gets enveloped in like a force field almost. And it doesn't have to push the water out of the way because of that, you know? And that maybe we think, when we send out our ships to investigate these things, that they're from another country and that they may be a threat.
Yeah, well, I think that there's probably possible. I mean, I don't know. It's possibly an element of truth to that. But it seems to me that most of the UFOs people are seeing are not our own, most of the USOs. That would, I think, probably a more difficult technology to develop, you know, but I would only be speculating. I really don't know.
Right. Well, really, none of us really know, yeah.
But what I find interesting is, you know, in terms of USOs and the possibility that there's an undersea base here off the Southern California coast, is not only do I have I collected like 50 or more cases of USOs in this area, but some abduction cases as well. And in a couple of these, people are not being taken into UFOs like you would think, with rounded walls and short, you know, I mean, small rooms that are indirect lighting, things like this, which is what you pretty much have learned to expect if you research this stuff. But these people are being taken into what they describe as underground bases, which mm-hmm. are very large.
I've heard
rock
that,
walls.
Yeah.
So I have three cases now of that, and each of them were abducted right, you know, off the coast here, or one was abducted actually out of Avalon Harbor from his boat on Catalina Island. So I think that there is some really strong evidence that there is some sort of undersea base here.
What do you think that UFO abduction cases seem to be more prevalent in the United States than anywhere else?
Yeah, there does seem to be that, and I think that there's a couple of explanations, possibly. I think one obvious explanation is, for whatever reason, we made great strides with UFO research, and because of our freedom of press, we were able to get a lot of attention paid to it, and were able to, you know, find the truth of what was really going on. But on the other hand, there's this rumor, I don't know, a story. I'm not sure how much truth you want to place in this or not, but it's certainly been told several times that we have traded technology to the aliens in exchange for allowing abductions to take place. And this was released, I believe, by Lear? Not Roger Lear.
John Lear.
John Lear.
That's yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He was one of the first guys to say this. But it's come from other sources as well, and it would make sense in some ways because the military has been implicated with being involved in some abduction cases. And certainly at least being aware of it or filming it or being very interested in abductees and haranguing them and hounding them, as well as, you know, following an abduction case. So,
well, I think at this point I'm going to end the interview, and I want to thank you because it's really been very interesting.